make myself believe it. This night will never go.
To talk with Art Bell, call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is indeed. Good evening. Lynn McTaggart's book is called The Field, which might equal The Force. I don't know. It's kind of like The Force, isn't it? The Field. The Quest for the Secret Force of the Universe. Lynn McTaggart began work on The Field 4 years ago as a personal quest. Her research took her to many areas around the globe, meeting with top frontier scientists in Russia, Germany, France, England, South America, Central America, and the USA. During these meetings, she saw what these scientists were working on, and it seemed to overthrow the current laws of biology, chemistry, and physics. Their theories and experiments also compounded into a new science, a new view of the world. For several years, she immersed herself in quantum physics and pored through hundreds of scientific papers to decoding what was often impenetrable work. In many cases, she had to pester the scientists to explain aspects of physics in order to check facts and interpretations. Lynn concludes that her work paints a picture of an interconnected universe and a new scientific theory which makes sense of supernatural phenomena. So if you're interested, stay right there. No matter... All right, we go all the way to the other side of the Atlantic for this. Lynn McTaggart, I believe, is in probably Great Britain somewhere or another, according to the number I dialed. Lynn, welcome to the program, and where are you?
Hi, Art. I'm in London.
In London?
Yeah, in Wimbledon. We're about 10 minutes from the tennis courts.
It's remarkable, Lynn. We've got a better connection right now than I get with many who are right here close by, and it's wonderful to have you. I love the title of your book. How'd you come up with that, The Field?
Well, it comes from the zero-point field, which was what I concluded was the thing that was tying everything together. I mean, from the material I looked at with many of these physicists, they found that this ground state of energy, which is the explosive energy in the space between things, this thing called the zero-point field, is the energy field that unites us like an invisible web. It is, as you say, like the Force in Star Wars.
It is, really. This energy that we're talking about, Lynn, I know it's speculated about, but has physics actually proven that it really exists?
Oh, yeah. It's been around for 40 or 50 years. I mean, the frustrating thing is that scientists, anybody knowing about quantum physics, is known about the zero-point field. But it messes up their scientific equations. It makes them not fit. So physicists for many years have subtracted it out. It's a process called renormalizing. And in my mind, it's so important. It's, you know, it's been like subtracting out God.
Renormalizing. Now, there's a word. Renormalizing. If it doesn't fit, we'll throw it out and then everything will be normal again.
Exactly. And that's what they've been doing. But a few frontier people have been realizing the importance of this, including places like NASA and British Aerospace, who have realized that this energy is so explosive. I mean, there's so much of it. It's even Stephen Hawking has found that there's this sort of thing exists in black holes. That they've been trying to extract this energy from the zero point field for space travel, because they figured, as they call it, it's a cosmic free lunch. If you can get energy out of empty space, you can power things to the next galaxy.
Okay, but they have not yet done that.
No, I mean, it looks like it's the likely thing. There are some scientists who have claimed that they've been able to extract energy, and there are a few studies showing that we can get a little bit of energy out of it now. But
that's right.
It's probably the next big thing.
How does human intention fit into this? In other words, a human intention, it would seem, as I talk to all these remote viewers and all these people who deal in non-things that appear to be non-local, it would appear that they're dealing with this field or this force, if you will, or in the area of this field and force. Do you believe that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. They're tapping into the field, no question.
So then human thought, is it your position that human thought, human intention can have physical consequence?
It's not just my belief. I mean, I think there's a lot of scientific evidence of that living intention is an actual physical something. You know, it's a tangible energy, and it is felt in the world, and we have science to prove it. We have science to measure it, to see what it does, and why.
Can you talk about any of that science? I mean, can you tell us what supports it?
Well, yeah. I mean, first of all, the theoretical stuff, just to understand why. There are two really important things about quantum physics. I'm not going to bore your listeners with a lot of quantum physics, but there's two things that are important to understand. I always think of reality like unset jello. And it's just this kind of blob of all possible things, because in the subatomic world, when you get right down to subatomic matter, it's an electron is all possible things all at once. It's not any determinate anything. It's like indeterminate energy that exists in all possible states in all time. Unset jelly, as I say. There's another important thing, which is that called action at a distance or non-locality, and that means that if two subatomic particles, two electrons, say, have been in contact, that you could move one to California and one to New York, and they would always know about each other and influence each other over any time or space. And it's like twins separated at birth that marry the same woman with the same name. And if you kick one down the stairs, the other one breaks his leg too, even if one is in California and one is in New York. They always know about each other. So what these two things suggest is that the world is not set, it's unset jello, and that things can affect other things at any kind of distance. So we know that sort of this randomness is just a basic feature of matter, but the one thing that makes this jello set is our observation, our intentions. It seems like we're some sort of ordering systems that set things in a certain frequency, and the medium for this seems to be the zero point field, because this unimaginable energy that I've talked about, that's doing an energy dance all the time, that's interacting with all of our subatomic particles, and our particles are doing a little dance of an exchange of energy back and forth with this zero point field. Any shift in the zero point field can cause massive changes in ground state energy, from particles to atoms, from molecules to matter. And so our ordering seems to cause this sort of shift in matter.
Our intention. So we're the ones who take this jello and give it substance, make it firm, and give it direction.
Exactly. I mean, the way physicists talk about it, they call it the observer effect. They've seen in their experiments that you can't actually figure out everything about an electron, you know, where it's going and what speed it's going at, all at the same time. But the one thing that stops any experiment to give them some sort of result is observation, or when humans take some sort of measurement. So it seems like we almost stop action. If you think of it as a film that's ongoing, we stop action and things happen at that particular moment. So it seems that we are, our act of noticing or our intentions about things create reality at that moment of attention. And then our intention seems to, it's not only that we get the jello to set, but we can influence it.
Huh. How great a power do you imagine this to be, Lynn? Ultimately, when it's understood and manipulated, how great a power do you think it is?
Well, I think it's extraordinary, and the problem is that because this is a whole new view of reality, we don't really understand our power. But let's just look at people who have worked on this, people like Buddhist monks. Mm-hmm. They've been doing a lot of work with them at Harvard recently, and they've found that they can wrap these guys in freezing blankets, wet freezing blankets that are, you know, 40 degrees. And within a few minutes, these fellows can air dry it. They can raise the temperature of their bodies so much that they can dry these blankets within a few minutes. Now, that is focusing and creating a powerful, powerful intention. Just by thinking this, they can completely change their own physicality.
And can all that be monitored scientifically? In other words, they can put sensors on the blankets. They can know exactly what's being done, even if they don't know how it's being done.
Exactly. Well, they've not only monitored that, but they've monitored what happens in things like meditation. And, you know, that their brains are actually changing. They're making big changes in their brains with constant meditation. Now, we also know this with studies that people have done of healers. They've actually seen that healers, when they heal, when they're touching salt water, they're changing they're making shifts in the oxygen-hydrogen bonds of that water. Almost like a little magnets, they're decreasing the bonding. And they've seen that also with Russian research on mind over matter, psychokinesis, you know, spoon bending. They found that, again, people who are very good at these mind over matter kind of experiments are having influences on the hydrogen-oxygen bonds in water molecules. So there are, you know, our intentions are actually in changing the molecular structures of things outside of ourselves.
Lynn, the Russians have done a lot with this, and so have some other countries. In fact, so much that really they're doing quite some bit more, or at least they were, than we were here in the U.S. or perhaps you in Britain. Is that now changing? Is the United States and Britain, are we beginning to pick up on all of this, or are we still lagging behind?
No, I think that Europe and, I mean, there are parapsychological societies now. There are places at universities like the University of Edinburgh and many places, and of course Princeton, many places around the West, where this is being taken seriously, and they're studying it. They're studying the effects of energies, Earth energies, solar energies on human psyche. They're looking at all kinds of parapsychological ability and studying it seriously. University of Freiburg, another place. I think the Russians still lead us in looking at the effects of other kinds of energies, like solar energies on geomagnetic fields, on our ability to tap into the field.
Why do you think the Russians are so, and have been so far ahead in looking at these areas that we've either been afraid to look at, or I'm not sure why we've been so reluctant compared to, say, the Russians? And I've been curious about that for some time, and I definitely want to talk to you about Princeton as well, but in fact, let's do that. The Princeton work fully captured my attention with the, you know, the eggs they've got out there. And we've been talking about this for some time. I think their work is absolutely incredible. I'm sure you've reviewed it very carefully. What do you think of what they're doing?
Well, I think it's unbelievable, because I think that they're demonstrating with the group consciousness project. That's what you're talking about, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
The eggs... That, you know, that if one mind has an effect, then there appears to be the situation that lots of minds thinking the same thought at the same time have a powerful effect. And that's what Roger Nelson and his Global Consciousness Project have been looking at. They've been just running these random event generators all around, in places all around the world, and just monitoring whether or not there's any shift in this random activity when something big happens, like Princess Diana dies, or the, of course, the Twin Tower disasters.
Yes.
They monitored and found that there was a big shift right before the first plane hit the first tower.
I know. I wonder if governments, particularly our government here in America, has begun to take an interest yet. You would certainly think in this day and age of, you know, terrorist awareness and all that, that we would begin to take an interest in something like that once it's cross some certain threshold of proof.
Well, I mean, you would think so. And the big problem is they probably do, just as they have been interested in UFOs for years and they were interested in psychic spying in the 70s. The problem is the rank and file like us don't find out about that these are probably black projects where they're, you know, looking into things like this. But the official party line, of course, is that they're not interested, and this is a lot of hooey.
I take it you don't believe that at all.
after the whole Stargate program and the psychic spying, I don't believe it at all. And after talking to people like Edgar Mitchell and some of the views of, you know, his views and his discussions with high-level people years ago about a Men in Black type organization that was in America looking at, you know, UFOs and claiming to privately to have evidence of extraterrestrial life. No, I don't believe it at all. I think these projects go on all the time and are just black programs.
Somebody called me in the last hour before you got on and said, "Hey, Art, what are your personal beliefs about extraterrestrial life?" And I thought real hard about it, and I said, "Well, go out on a nice starry night, look at all those stars, and you know there are planets around all of them, and I think I do believe there is life out there. How about you?"
Well, I mean, interestingly enough, just over the weekend, there was some information that some government has just picked up some signal that they cannot attribute to anything that's out there, any space station, any information as we know it, any kind of life signal that as we know it. So that may be the very beginnings of an official demonstration that there is extraterrestrial life.
Yes, I'm trying very hard to stay up on the story. It's said to be 1,000 light years out, emanating from a place that doesn't make any sense. And the story that talks about it almost poo-poos it as hard as it can, saying, well, you know, maybe it's in the telescope at Arecibo, maybe it's something internal in the telescope, maybe this, maybe that, maybe it's a fraud, maybe a lot of things, but gee, we've had the signal 3 times now, and it's pretty exciting. If we actually did get affirmative word, Lynn, that we did have a signal and there are others, how do you think that would be digested in the world?
Well, I think it would verify a lot of people's beliefs in one sense, and then I think in other sense there'd be a lot of people who'd be fearful based on a lot of the stuff that's come out of Hollywood that these people are going to come and eat us or destroy us. I think that there would be a mixture of excitement, awe, and fear. And
yes,
of course, there would be the official, you know, poo-pooing of most of this, and because, you know, the governments have believed that we can't handle information like this.
Well, that's a pretty good question by itself. This apparently initially occurred back in February of 2003, and we're just now hearing about it. Now, I've been told by SETI and have interviewed many people in SETI that we would be told right away if they got some kind of signal. Now, I don't know that I'm buying that. How about you?
I don't buy it at all. I mean, it's just, as I say, like the Stargate psychic spying program. I mean, we still haven't got all of the information about that. Only a tiny bit of it has been declassified. And here was extremely good, solid evidence that remote viewing works, that, you know, that we can actually spy on the Russians mm-hmm. as they did in the 70s and spy on other countries through remotely, just through thought. And that, you know, it was hidden, and despite the fact that everybody knows it about it now, they still hide the, you know, the data about it. They still haven't declassified all the information.
Well, so, that's right.
You know, that's what they do.
All right. We're at a break point here, Lynn. Hold on. And when we come back, I'm going to ask you what I've asked so many others. If remote viewing works, and obviously you believe it does, then why would the government have terminated the program with prejudice just about, right? And is it going on now? A very good question. And any government who could really spy on their enemy, or our enemies, we have many around the world right now, and do it accurately, would they give that up and say, oh, it's nothing? I don't think so.
Talk with Art Bell. Call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is. Lynn McTaggart from London is my guest. Good evening or morning, everybody. This is going to be fascinating stuff all night long. Stay right where you are. I think through the years, I've probably talked to every remote viewer that was in the secret government program, just about every one of them, I believe. And Lynn, they all say roughly the same thing when you talk to them about why the program was discontinued. They say on the one hand, well, it was very successful with very high percentages of hits. And then when you ask them why it was discontinued, they say, well, they were scared of it, or it was an embarrassment to them, or something like that. And I've never been able to buy that. You know, if it really did work, especially in this current day and age of people trying to sneak in bombs and what have you, perfect targets for remote viewers, how could they possibly have discontinued the program?
Well, I think they talk themselves out of it working. I think that they put together a couple of skeptics who reviewed the data and said, actually, it's meaningless. And it could well have been. I think that this was probably the public face of it. That they, you know, that they used this to sort of poo-poo it to the public. I don't think that that was necessarily the private view, because after the 9/11 tragedy,
yes.
I know some very good remote viewers who told me they were contacted by the government to determine whether or not the seawall right near the Twin Towers had been destroyed, because they were worried about flooding as well as everything else. So, you know, just on that point, and a couple of other ones were asked to try to determine where bin Laden was, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that there still is a private understanding that, you know, that this works.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't, like most things, they don't want to make it public because I think they're frightened about what the public will do with it.
Or could they have discontinued the one program publicly and, you know, sort of had it reborn as a black ops type thing that we're just simply not hearing about any more than we heard about the first program when it was underway?
I mean, it's very possible. I think that this is what the government does. I mean, we have evidence for that in the, you know, the Stargate program and evidence since that, you know, that this is the kind of thing they do. If they have something very sensitive and they're concerned about all of us out here being able to use that same ability,
yes,
then they keep it quiet.
Indeed.
But of course, people like Skip Atwater and Joe McMonagle, who were part of that program, very much indicate that anybody can do remote viewing and indeed teach it. I mean, and that is, you know, we have an upcoming conference in London, and that's going to be one of the workshops, is showing people how to do remote viewing.
All right. What exactly do remote viewers do, or how do they do it, would be, I guess, a better question. Is it a search through this? I've heard it referred to as kind of like Googling whatever is out there. I don't know, kind of like when you go to Google and you put in a search term, you might get a lot of answers to it, and you've got to find the one that makes sense. Or I don't know, how are they doing this? They're going through this zero-point field or this non-locality, or what are they doing?
Well, you got to think of your mind like a radio receiver, not like the source of the information, but just the person that's the thing that's picking it up. I mean, a lot of people like Carl Prebram and people after him who are looking at what consciousness is, what the mind is, are convinced that the mind is not the brain, and that our minds, our brains are picking up frequencies. We're just, as I say, like a radio picking up signals from a radio station. We're picking up frequencies of information and decoding it, and that information largely exists in this zero point field, which is like a memory of everything that ever was. I mean, all frequencies, all the you know, quantum frequencies exist forever and can hold unimaginable amounts of information. And so we're just picking that up. Now, remote viewers, ordinarily we have a very narrow bandwidth. We're just picking up radio one. But if you learn to work as a remote viewer, you end up being able to pick up radio two as well. And as I say, we talked about non-locality before and the idea that that things can be separated, but you can still get information about it. Electrons can get information about each other despite any distance, time or distance. And I think that's what's happening with remote viewers, too. They are non-locally picking up frequencies in the zero-point field, and they're just training themselves to widen that bandwidth.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. How much has science actually proven so far? In other words, what can you tell us about experiments that have been done? I know something about Princeton and some other things, but how much is absolute truth? I mean, proven science.
Proven science that remote viewing works.
Or any other area that's sort of over the edge of, for example, human intent and influence on something physical or even non-physical, another human being, anything that shows us that working through that field actually does happen.
Okay, well, I have a really interesting thing to answer that with, Art. I was just chatting with Rupert Sheldrake, scientist Rupert Sheldrake, over the weekend, and he was telling me about a really interesting thing he had done recently, because he was tired of skeptics saying, there's no evidence for psychic ability.
Right.
And he looked at, he has studied the medical literature, scientific literature, to see how many studies are truly scientific, which means they're blinded, they're double blind, so that the experimenter and the people being experimented on don't know who is having the experiment and who isn't.
Right.
And he found that with medicine, with ordinary science, it was about 1%, a couple of percents. He found with psychic studies, all the studies of parapsychology, it was 89%.
Wow.
That parapsychology overall had overwhelmingly the most scientific studies of all. And so the answer to you is enormous evidence. I mean, there's certain big holes we have. We need to do many more experiments to find out how powerful intention is, what we can use it for exactly. But we know a lot of things. We know lots of things about what intention does. I mean, we know, for instance, that our intention, we have plenty of evidence that our intention, that there is such a thing as micro mind over matter. Our intention can influence random machines. There's plenty of Princeton work on that. We know our intention can influence living systems, human and otherwise, that we've plenty of studies showing that people can, through thought alone, can control the direction of fish. There have been studies showing we can make gerbils run faster on activity wheels. There have been studies where they've shown that they've been able to influence blood cells in the lab. But then we know there's lots of studies on humans, healing, that people can calm people, can calm down nervous people. Loads and loads of studies on healing.
And yet all of this still seems very much on the edge of what might be when we really figure this out. You know, we're sort of working in the margins, at the very edge, influencing the most influenceable, the machines you talked about, the computers that are spitting out random numbers, and just a slight bit of something or another manages to make it non-random. Just sort of on the very edge of things, but somewhere behind all of this, there's a very great deal of power, I have this feeling.
Oh, I think this is, again, when you study people who have been able to really control this, like sensitives of all sorts, as they call them, you know, shaman, or look at Buddhist monks who have really developed a discipline of mind to widen their ability, mm-hmm. the ability that we all have, but we're not told, and we don't think we have, through the paradigm that we're given of how we work and how the universe works. When we understand there's a different way that we actually work, and there's a different paradigm out there, then through developing these things, we have many more powers. We have, you know, it's something present in all of us.
Well,
so it's not this arcane, weird thing.
Well, when you ask remote viewers about remote influencing, they tend to get very quiet, and they don't want to talk a whole lot about it. And so I thought I would ask you about it. Remote influencing is a pretty scary thing to a lot of people. Maybe it's what even, perhaps it's what scared the government away. Who knows? But is it possible to remotely influence another mind?
Absolutely. Well, we know it's possible to remotely influence another body through all those healing experiments that we've talked about. I mean, the great studies of the late Elizabeth Targ, who got healers all across America to heal terminal AIDS victims. And she found that it didn't matter whether they were Christian healers or they were Native American shaman. If they had a good intention to heal, it worked. And so there's, you know, if you can influence a body, mm-hmm. you probably can influence a mind too. And it is frightening because, again, we don't know what is the limits of the power of intention. Larry Dossey did his wonderful book, Be Careful What You Pray For. He studied negative prayer. He was really interested in all of that. You know, does the voodoo effect really work? And he found there was, you know, a lot of evidence for that. But there's also some preliminary evidence saying that you can block, you can almost put a psychic shield around yourself and block negative influence. But once again, it's something that we all have to learn. It just is just the same as saying, well, we could be hurt. Somebody could come over and stab us. That possibility exists, but we take certain precautions. So we just need to learn how to take psychic precautions now.
Uh-huh. Well, apparently so. So it doesn't really matter whether the intent is positive or negative. Now, there are some who really loudly proclaim that negative intention will not work. The only thing they say that will work is positive intention. I think that's wrong, isn't it?
I think it's wrong, too. But, again, this is an area we really have to look into. This is what needs to be, this is one of the things that we're working on at the moment. We're working on some intention experiments. I'm setting up some experiments with some scientists, some noted scientists, to just take this, to push this boat out a bit more, to find out, what is the limits here? How fast can it work? Can we help? Can we just send out intentions to heal people faster? But we are working mostly on our, on positive intention. But of course, one wants to, one of the experiments we want to do is to look at a positive versus a negative intention and see if one has the bigger effect.
Or if you really want to walk out on a plank, Lynn, does it, certainly there have been a lot of interesting conclusive studies about prayer. And the person prayed for it does not even have to be aware of the fact they are. So you can throw away the voodoo aspect of it in that sense.
Yes.
It works. We know that much. Now, let's think for a second. Does it matter whether the prayer is made in God's name or not?
No, it doesn't. Because look at Elizabeth Targ's studies again. She was using some people who were Christians, and she was using some people who used a grandmother, Native American figure called Star Woman.
Yes.
And both worked just as well. And I asked her, what was the common factor that made it work? And she said, well, all the healers said the most important thing was just to get out of the way, get your own ego out of the way, and just sort of ask, please may this person be healed. Ask a higher power. So I think that the higher power is, whatever you want to call it, the absolute is the only important thing to get in touch with in some way, in your own way. And that can be many ways. A lot of people is just getting into some sort of alpha state, slowing your mind down to a slow meditative state. That seems to be the important factor.
Well, there are a lot of religious groups that would be very upset about that. I remember watching a couple of movies that, I can't remember their names now, but it doesn't matter. This lady in the movie had a great power, and the people in her community demanded that she say this power was from God. And I'll tell you what, when she wouldn't do that, they were ready to burn her at the stake.
Well, I think that, it's important for everyone to understand that, we all have different gods. We all have a different view of God. And, I defy anybody out there, any religious group, to define what God is. And I think that the only important thing to really say here is God is to acknowledge an absolute, not necessarily to say it is the man with the white beard, but that there is a God out there, and that, for instance, a lot of people have asked me about the field. Does the field, challenge God? And I say, no, the field proves God.
Hmm.
The field proves there is a God out there. And there is an absolute, there is a force beyond us that we are all one with. And the big problem always with everything, whether it's 9/11 or this kind of challenging that this person has said, it's about, the biggest problem is about thinking you are separate. And that's where all of our problems in the world stem from, is the notion that we are all separate beings on this lonely little planet in a lonely little universe. That's the view biology gives us. And then we build our religions on. But actually, if we understand the true nature of what scientists are saying now, what I'm trying to say in the field, it's that we are all one. We're all part of this giant energy field. We are not separate.
But does it actually confirm the presence of God, or does it simply confirm that we inevitably attach the name God or magic to anything we do not understand? And someday we may understand the force, the field, whatever it is. We may gain an understanding of it. It may not have anything to do with a higher power, an entity, the bearded God of the Bible. It may have to do with something that we just haven't discovered yet.
Yeah, but I think it's. I think there's an understanding that there is, whether you want to just call it energy field, that there is a higher energy field that we are part of, and that to many people is an absolute energy. It's an absolute force. That's why I say I like Larry Dossey's word, the absolute, because it is. You know, it is about a God. Now, it's just words sometimes, but you could call, you know, the Holy Ghost, or you could call being in a state of grace, being in the field.
Yes.
You know, and it's just a different way. As I say, I think what I'm trying to do is span, to provide a science of spirituality, and to say that there is validation for people's beliefs, because science is now catching up with it and proving that these sorts of things exist.
It absolutely is. Do you have any idea where it goes next? We know what research is going on right now. Where is it going?
Well, as I say, I'm working on some intention experiments and just trying to push the boat out to see, to try to quantify what we can do with this. And then there's a lot of study now looking at trying to work out how do you, this incredible energy field with, you know, I always say that, you know, if you were sitting a few yards away from me, there'd be enough energy between the two of us to boil all the oceans of the world. I mean, it's that kind of energy density. And there's a lot of scientists around the world working on trying to get energy out of the zero-point field. And there are scientists all over the world trying to work out a bit more about what happens during states of meditation. You know, how is it changing your brain? And what are we doing? And other studies showing that when people do healing or send out an intention, that it not only changes the fabric of what they're healing, as I say, changing the oxygen-hydrogen bonds, but they can measure energy coming out of people, that voltages of coming out of healers just zooms up enormously. And they're trying to figure out where and how this, you know, this energy is coming out.
Yes. Yeah, so they have actually measured an increase in what, the brain activity?
Well, there's a measurable energy that comes out. There were two people who did very interesting studies on this. A physicist called William Tiller.
All right, hold it right there. We're time pressed to the top of the hour. We'll jump right back on this when we get back. I'm Art Bell. That would be the Caribbean. I see earthquakes and lightning. I see bad times. This is Coast to Coast AM.